Okay, I'm not certain about the formalities of this. I guess it's maybe a little bit less than ideal in terms of trying to have a workout session here. And we'd like to maybe at the outset offer a few disclaimers so that I don't get in trouble later on. And that being, I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know what your expectations are in terms of this particular session. Yeah, feel free to move up. I think that will help in terms of voice. It looks like we're without amplification. So move in as close as you like. And I think that'll help. I see a few more maybe coming across the way. Yeah, again, in terms of the disclaimer, so I don't know exactly what the executive committee was had in mind in assigning this to me. I think I was feeling maybe a little bit that like this is maybe somewhat unconnected from the main theme, and yet possibly still finding ways to be connected in terms of this particular session. That is, again, the New Testament believer and his relation to the Old Testament. So if you feel like you're being cheated of sorts and you want me to sign your paper, you know, to get a refund for your for this session, you let me know afterward. We can take care of that. Also, maybe an advantage of being out here is that there's no clock on the wall, and so you're not going to be watching the clock, you know, so I'll be able to be free in terms of being able to share in this session. Also, apparently, we're going to be dealing with some noise around us, so I'll do the best I can in terms of continuing to connect with what I'd like to say. And probably, till it's all over, there'll be some things that, oh, I forgot to say that, I wish I would have said that, you know, so we'll work on, again, because of the time, I'll do the best I can. I think it would be well that we pause for prayer before we proceed further, even in this session. Heavenly Father, we're praying that you would meet with us even in this session, and that as we look at this subject, this concept, this idea of the New Testament believer and his relation to the Old Testament, that you would be with us as well, and that perhaps we can bring things together out of this session to be applicable for us, perhaps personally, as well as corporately, in our congregations back home, as we proceed forward in what it means to be your sons and daughters, and any way that you want to speak to us today. To that end, we pray in Jesus' name, amen. Also, I find myself, when I am in your position, and a speaker is up here speaking, and along the way, and my mind is turning, the cogs are moving, and I'm thinking things through, and I think, hey, you know, well, what about this? You know, and what about that? Have you given consideration to this concept? Have you given consideration to that idea? And so, at the outset, I'm going to say, as I present the material here today, that there may be things that you think I should underline, so you can talk to me afterwards. There may be things that you think I should cross out, so talk to me afterwards. And also, then, I would like to say that there may be things that you say, maybe you ought to circle. And when I circle something, that means I go back to my office and I process that a little bit more in terms of getting a good understanding on what is going on. So, and I think perhaps I'm going to watch as closely as possible, and I think we're out of here at around 4:30. Is that correct? Does that seem right? I'll pause maybe a few minutes before that. And so for a little bit of feedback, okay, what do I cross out? What do I circle? And what do I underline? We're dealing again here at the outset with the whole idea of the believer, New Testament believer, and his relation to the Old Testament. And I pause. Again, stay with me, because occasionally along the way I might pause, and we'll hit pause, and we'll go, let's see. You have speakers who talk about a rabbit trail, and they get on a rabbit trail. And I say this very kindly and very respectfully. I think recently in our congregation, Brother Walter was speaking, and he said something about he's gotten to the point now where his rabbit trails begin to multiply like rabbits. So I don't know if that's going to be the case here. What I say sometimes in my, I think in my classes, I say, or let's see, I said this recently, that I would like to identify or delineate what a rabbit trail is. And I say that a rabbit trail is something that goes off into the woods, into a bush, and kind of goes nowhere. They're linear in nature. So I would rather say that I get on a rabbi trail that is circular in nature. So we begin at a certain subject and go around in a circle and come back to the same subject, come back to the subject, so we're back to the material at hand. So there's a difference between rabbit trails and rabbi trails. So I may get on a rabbit trail. If I get on a rabbit trail, I'll try to identify that. Or maybe I get on a rabbi trail, we'll come back and in other words, some way it connects to what we want to present. Also, I think for sake of time, I would like at least an element of participation from you along the way so that we begin to connect as well in some manner, in some way. And that is, would like for someone to be prepared to respond with a couple of verses. Now again, we are working with a New Testament believer in relation to the Old Testament. So we're not working with a text necessarily. We're going to be jumping around with several verses, several locations along the way in terms of dealing with this subject. There's someone here who has with them, I think it's the NIV translation, NIV Bible. Anyone with an NIV? We have one, a couple here. Would it work for you up here front to be ready with, I'm thinking, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 3. Just be prepared with that, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 3. Someone else from King James, be ready with Genesis chapter 2 and verse 3. Someone else, King James, Genesis 2 and verse 3. Okay, you guys are together on Genesis 2 and verse 3. Let's see. Someone be prepared with Matthew chapter 5, verse 13 through 16. Matthew 5, 13 through 16. Anyone? Okay, there. Okay, thank you. And I'm forgetting who all is doing this, so when I call it out, then you'll know who you are and you can respond. Let's see. Let's go with someone in Genesis in chapter 8 and verse, I think it's 22. Last verse in Genesis 8. 22. Genesis 8 and 22, right here up front. Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 15. Someone Deuteronomy 5 and 15. Okay, right there. Okay. And I'll see if I can pull some of this stuff together. All right. I think we'll begin and proceed a little bit, and then as I get into it, then we'll kind of move around a bit. I would like to say at the outset here, and this is one thing that I find very interesting. In fact, I have my briefcase in my car, my vehicle out here in the parking lot. Here's the deal. When we're talking about the New Testament believer and his relation to the Old Testament, we're speaking about, I think at least, the way in which we relate to the Old Testament. And I think we've heard already somewhat in passing in the sessions, at least in the men's session, well, that's Old Testament, comes from the Old Testament, it's all rules and regulations, and we don't want to be bound to that. What I'm saying is that as I see it, as I view it, and as I'm finding, can I say it like this, in our camp, I'm speaking about the Anabaptist camp, I'm speaking about even very conservative Anabaptist camp, In fact, I have literature in my vehicle that would support the concept and the idea of can I say, going back to ritual and rite of the Old Testament. I'm speaking now specifically, for example, of worshiping on the Sabbath, those sorts of things. And to include also, now this is over into the area of end time events, the area of prophecy, speaking about spiritual Israel and whether or not the church has replaced Israel. That's a subject all its own. We don't have time to deal with that. I'm simply saying that there are those around us, and again, in our camp, who are advocating the idea that we deal with things like that. Advocating the fact that, that we go back to some of the ritual and rite of the Old Testament. Here's where I am personally. I am not there. I don't think that we ought to be bound to a lot of the ritual and rite of the Old Testament. However, I find it intriguingly interesting to study much of the ritual and rite in the Old Testament and to, in essence, to understand the principle and to apply those principles to the life of the New Testament believer. I think that's okay. And again, we're going to be walking through some of this stuff as we get into this subject of the New Testament believer and in reference to the Old Testament and his relation to the Old Testament. So, in doing so, we'd like to, again, look at a few verses, few subjects, few locations along the way and see if we can make any sense out of this at all. And again, we'll wait until the end of the hour to see if it did make any sense. Again, as we proceed, let's take a look at this. And specifically, in terms and thinking about the connections that we can make relative to separation, what it means to be separate. So, let's begin. Fasten your seatbelts and let's go. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 14. Let's see. Let me pause very quickly and let's pick up someone do for us, be prepared for us. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 5. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 5. And hopefully my voice can hang on until the end here. With all of the flapping in the breeze. All right, let's go. Genesis chapter 1, verse 14. What do we find? And God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years." Fascinating. Extremely interesting. He's talking here about what? Say it again.
Calendar.
A calendar. Seasons. Anyone else?
Time.
Something else?
Separation.
Who did it? Someone got an A for the day. Separation. To divide. And what is division? It is separation. To separate the day from the night. Let's pause here on this one. Think this one through. And we had that in our text, right? From last night. Is that correct? Where is it now? Not unequally yoked together with fellowship with unrighteousness and righteous, and the common, and what communion hath light with darkness? What communion hath light with darkness? Again, we're back here in Genesis, and we're speaking here about the division of the night, dividing the day from the night. Incidentally, let's work on this one a bit. I find it fascinating. My classes, I like to work with definition. So talk to me. What is darkness?
Absence of light.
Thank you. You also got an A for the day. Darkness is not, excuse me. Oh, what is light then? No, I find that very interesting because it's talking here again. Darkness does not overcome light, but rather light overcomes darkness. Again, Gospel of John. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And the world could not comprehend it. What's that talking about? It is talking about overwhelming. And I think the word is katas kasanthi in the Greek there. Has the idea of a blanket like coming down and covering up light. Couldn't do it. Darkness could not squelch out the light. Again, understand, isn't it true that if you have a straight distance for a mile, isn't it a mile or thereabouts, that you can take a candle, single candle, and light a single candle in pitch darkness a mile away and you can see it. I think that's the case. Very interesting. Again, now think this through. We're talking ever again in the context of separation. Relative, we're trying to make threads here, and we're trying to make a fabric that connects to our subject for the weekend here, in terms of separation. Now, as we proceed along the way, we're going to sort of catalog things here on the side in terms of what it means for the New Testament believer and his relation to the Old Testament. Let's pause, though, and let's see. Then we have Matthew chapter 5, verse 13 through 16. Let's hear that one. Someone have that?
You're the light of the world?
I got it right here.
Yes.
Matthew 5, 17.
Excuse me, 13 through 16.
13 through 16. You're the salt of the earth, and if your soul wants to save the world, it should be salt. It's sensible to do for nothing. If you cast out your project before you come, you're the light of the world. The city that is set on the hill cannot be hidden. Neither do you. Man light a candle, put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, but give light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven.
Ye are the what of the what? Let's back up on salt of the earth, and you're the light of the world. I find that one extremely interesting. Why are you the salt of the earth and the light of the world, and not the light of the earth and the salt of the world? Huh? You ever work on that one? That's interesting. Stay with me, don't get lost, because here's what's going on. You are the salt of the earth. And what is salt all about? A preservative of sorts. I understand that those words that are used there are different words. We're talking one of the cosmos. You are the light of the cosmos. No, yes, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. You are the light of the cosmos. What, you're the salt of the earth? Hang in here. We're talking about, can I say, culture. We're talking about culture. We're talking about the earth. We're talking about in... Yeah, let's stay there. We're talking about culture. So that you are a preserver of culture as the salt of the earth. But the light of the world is, the world there, speaking cosmos, meaning this system, this world order, this worldview, ideologies, thought processes of this world. You are not to preserve the thought processes of this world. Get a hold of that one. Again, we are to preserve culture. We are the salt of the earth. We're to be preservers of culture. And by doing so, we do so by living that life which is separate. Moreover, bringing to society, bringing to the people around us, bringing to our neighbors, a preserving phenomena of sorts because of our connection to the Father. Are you with me? And that is distinctly different than being the light of the world. Now hang in there, because the light of the world, again, is the ideologies of this world. So we are to bring into that light, we still shed light upon the ideologies of this world, again, as being a separate people. The importance of being, again, a separate people. First of all, by being preservers of culture, being preservers of society. Again, by our lifestyle. Let's see, I think, wasn't it the last hour by all that we heard, right? Being a separate people in terms of media, in terms of leisure, in terms of dress, in terms of all that we do, right? Then he goes on in that text, and he speaks about a city that is set on a hill. Do not be hid. Neither do men take a candle and light it and put it under a bushel. I find that intriguing as well. Because we're still speaking about this whole concept, again, of being the salt of the earth and the light of the world. And we move now into a concept which takes us into the public domain, the city that's set on the hill, and the private domain. We're speaking now about the candle that we use in our households. Again, in that tension, the tension between the public and the private. Again, that we continue to be the salt that we talked about, and also then the light to the world. Very quickly, a side note of sorts here, I think I understand that culturally from that day and from that era. Incidentally, I think I find it extremely important, if not indeed imperative, to first of all study, shall we say, even culturally, the backdrop and the background of Scripture to understand a bit more clearly what they're speaking about in terms of the text that comes to us. Let's see, doesn't it say that the salt, if the salt has lost its savor, therefore it's no longer good but to be cast out and trodden under the foot of men? My understanding is, I learned that just recently. In fact, I think it was just this weekend. My understanding is that in the culture of that day, they would, I don't know, mine of sorts or whatever the case is in terms of finding their salt. Put it in a bag, and then they would use it in their cooking process, and they would, like, you know, put it down while they were cooking to get the flavor of the salt. And after a duration of time, no longer did the salt have any saltiness to it. Then they would cast it out into into the roadways, to the byways, and it was trodden under the foot of men. I mean, the granules, what was left from the salt content. Again, think that one through in terms of what it means for us to be, again, the salt of the earth. And once more, in terms of this connection, in terms of this thread that takes us back to the whole concept, the idea of separation. Now, back to Genesis in chapter 1. And we work through that a bit. Chapter 1 and verse 14. Again, what we're talking here when it talks about the division, dividing the day and the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And I think some may have heard me present some of this, but I proceed forward. What comes to your mind when you think about signs and seasons? Signs and seasons, days and years, but signs and seasons. What are you thinking about?
Time cycles.
Summer, winter, fall, spring. Does that come to your mind when you talk about signs and seasons? It's interesting. Because I think here what's going on, and we take a look at the Hebrew on this one. And the Hebrew word that is used there is Moed or Moedim. Moed. And it has the idea of appointed times. It means appointed times. All right, someone was ready with Genesis chapter 8 and verse 22. Let's hear Genesis chapter 8 and verse 22.
While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease.
Seed time and harvest, cold and heat, and summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. And when did that occur? When was that recorded? 8:22. After the flood. I venture that the seasons as we know them, now, here with all the rain and salt, seasons as we know them did not occur until Genesis 8 and 22 after the flood. So what happens when we go back to Genesis 1:14? Signs and seasons. What are we talking about? We are talking about, again, the Hebrew word there, Moed or Moedim. My appointed times. That's the first one we're going to put in our catalog over here in terms of the New Testament believer and his relation to the Old Testament. These are my times. God is speaking in terms of duration of time. They're my times. Let's see. I think we're ready. Did anyone have Leviticus? Let's go to Leviticus chapter 23, verse 1 to 3. Someone do that for us, if I've not handed it out. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 1 through 3. And someone be ready for then Leviticus 23, verse 4 and 5. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 1 through 3. Someone. Last time you ever went to a feast? Ever been to a feast recently? You don't have feasts in your communities? Huh? Weddings? A wedding feast. Oh, okay. I find it interesting that, again, we're making this connect here. The word that is used there, mo'adim, is the same word that's used there for feast. And now we're talking about my appointed times. My appointed times. Let's see. How do we arrive at personal possessive in our English language? How's that happen? I'm back to you. You hit me in the... You're an instructor. You hit me in choir practice. How do we arrive at personal possessive in the English language? Oh, it's mine. Belongs to me. And for the German, it's gehört mir. That's mine. Keep your hands off of it, you guys back there. That's my girlfriend. Keep your mitts away. Yeah, personal possessive. Again, find it interesting that in the Hebrew, and we don't have time to get into that very extensively, but operates with a pronominal ending. And if I had a blackboard here, something I could show it, or an overhead. I think we're familiar, aren't we? For example, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani. Okay, my God, or God of me. More properly translated, God of me, why have you forsaken me? Again, that personal possessive ending, God of me, or my ending. Mo'adi, we're speaking here again about God's appointed times. And we just heard that from Leviticus 23, these are my appointed times that you shall, or these are my feasts, which you shall proclaim in their appointed times, or in their seasons, in their season. Okay, again. We're talking now about God's appointed time. Now, it's interesting. It's interesting that actually what is occurring there, let's see. I think it's read for us again, verse 3. Try verse 3 again. Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 3. Maybe I'll turn to that to help us kind of keep on track here. Six days shall work be done, but on the seventh day you shall rest. I find that intriguing. Again, we're talking now about the New Testament believer and his relation to the Old Testament. And here's another one that we're going to put into our catalog. Because these are my appointed times, and my appointed times are for you to observe. Intriguing. Now, incidentally, now we're hitting pause. We're hitting pause there. Let's go back and talk about what I'd said earlier, that I don't think that I find it well for us as believers to go back and to get all bound up in the ritual and rite of the Old Testament. Do you hear me? Do you understand me? However, I am saying, in fact, I personally would like to perhaps take a congregation through a whole year cycle and following through the Feast of Israel. I taught a course a couple times on the Feast of Israel. And seeing how, if we can see the principle and all the ritual and the rite that is a part of that in terms of the life, can we say, the spiritual, the religious life cycle of Israel. It's very fascinating. In other words, we do. We start with Passover, and we go all the way over to Tabernacles. Incidentally, it's a good thread. It's a good pattern when you study prophecy, how that Christ came and fulfilled for us the Passover lamb. finds up, and we end up over in Feast of Booths, Tabernacles, in God tabernacling with us. It's not our subject here today, or we'd get into it. But once more, we're talking here about what God has instituted and set in order in terms of what it means to follow through with God in charge, Him in charge, in terms of the way in which we function relative to our time. Relative to our time. I'd like to now take a look, and we'll pause and take a look. Again, I talked here about Israel and how that they were instructed to observe their... And we read feasts. We read feasts. But better translation is appointed times. How we're supposed to... Israel. How Israel was supposed to observe the appointed times. Let's take another look here. Let's see. I think I can do this yet, and we won't get disconnected or disjointed. Let's pause right now and hear from Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 15. I think I handed that one. Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 15.
And remember that thou wast a servant in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord thy God brought thee out of hands through a mighty hand by a stretched out arm. Therefore, the Lord thy God commanded thee to keep the Sabbath day.
Again, what was he saying there? He was saying that I want you to remember that I brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the land of bondage, and as a result of that, I want you to observe the Sabbath. Very interesting. Very fascinating. And I've said before when I presented this other times that I think this is a principle that I think we could get a hold of. Because, again, we don't have time to get into that, but Exodus. Exodus, where it's speaking about the Passover service itself. I forget now, offhand. I think maybe it's in chapter 12 thereabouts, somewhere there. And it says that, you know, you shall pause and you shall allow for, there's a place in there, you pause and you allow for your sons to ask questions. Why is this night different than all the rest? And what's the proper response? Father then says, well, because God delivered us out of bondage, from under the Egyptian bondage. Again, principle? What's a principle? Principle for us is that I think our Sabbaths ought to be a time in which we find ourselves, engaging and sharing with each other. Speaking about what? Our deliverance out and under from the bondage of sin. Try that sometime. And if there's, I don't know if there are any pastors here in this group, but try that sometime. Go back home and lead your congregation through that on Sunday morning. You got to see, next weekend or something. And I'll just pause and say, all right, here's what we want to do. We would like to hear from you personally. What it means to you personally to have experienced your deliverance from the bondage of sin. What would that do? Could that in any way revolutionize our times together? On the Sabbath, which is an appointed time by God Himself. That is. All right, let's go on further. Back to Leviticus in chapter 23 again. Once more, the believer and his connection to the Old Testament. Lord said, spake to Moses, saying, speaking to the children of Israel, saying to them concerning the feast of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be what? Holy convocations. Holy convocations. Here again, when was the last time that you attended a holy convocation? Anyone? Last week? Or?
I'm in one right now.
You're in one right now? All right! Woo! Somebody's searching, fishing for A's, huh? You redeem yourself, yes. All right, let's work on this a bit. What does it mean? What is holiness all about? Holiness. What is holiness? What's the essence of holiness?
Separation.
Where'd you get that idea? Huh?
God.
I got that idea from God. Say it again.
God is the essence.
Okay, of holiness. Okay, all right. Yes. I'm here. I had some background noise there. All right, let's see. I think I had asked early on for someone here with a copy of the NIV, and we're going to do Genesis chapter 2 and verse 3.
And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done.
And someone was going to do a King James on that. Yes.
And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made.
All right, we're talking about holiness. We're talking about holiness here. And that, well, let's see. Exodus, where is it? Exodus in about chapter 3 and verse 5, I think it is. And think this one through, and stay with me now. We're talking about holiness. God speaking to Moses at the burning bush, and he said, take off your shoes from off your feet, for the ground that you stand on is
holy
ground. This is another one we want to catalog here in our catalog in terms of the New Testament believer and his connection to the Old Testament. What makes the ground that Moses was standing on, what makes it holy? How did it become holy? God was present there. Whew, that's interesting. Think that one through. Now, we have a principle that's coming to us from the Old Testament. That when holiness is around us, or you find holiness, you find the presence of God. Work on that one. Where are you in what you just heard in the last session? Where are you in terms of media, in terms of leisure, in terms of dress, in terms of recreation? Is God present there? Relative to your conduct, are you separate from, again, the world, as we saw in Matthew chapter 5? Is there any difference? Is there any difference? I find it intriguing as well. Again, and that's why we went here to chapter 2 and verse 3. King James says, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. And I think, what is it? There are other translations out here. You might find, for example, like what? Perhaps the New American Standard, New English Version, so also saying holy. And he holy that day. He sanctified it. Sanctification, holiness, very close partners in terms of what it means. I find it interesting. Here again, the word that is used, the Hebrew word for holiness is kodesh. Kodesh. And it means to kind of divide and to separate. There's a kind of a fascinating study. And I suppose you all have your little hobbies of sorts, don't you? What are your hobbies? What kind of hobbies do you have? I don't know, rebuilding engines or something, you guys. Dresses or something, you ladies. Cooking or whatever the case might be. I find myself, my hobby is, at least as time allows, I like to study Hebrew. Very fascinating. And you know what I talk about when I say hieroglyphics? Like way back in the eons ago when they just used little pictures and so to depict communication. From there it progressed along the way until we have the, shall we say, what do we call it? The font that we use today to include either the Hebrew font or Greek font or... whatever the English font as we use it today, the articles of our alphabet. That word there that is used in Hebrew, kodesh, in the pictographic form or the antiquated form, comes with it and has the idea of the dalet. It's a kaf dalet shin, or let's see, the other way around for you all, kaf dalet shin, because Hebrew from right to left. Kaf Dalet Shin, and that the middle character, incidentally, Hebrew, most all the words finally condensed down into three consonants as the root word for any word in Hebrew, basically. And that middle character in Kodesh is the Dalet, and the Dalet, again from the pictograph, has the idea of a flap or something like a tent door, like a tent flap. And what is that doing? Well, flapping in the weeds, right? But it also, it divides again, right? It separates the inside from the outside. So there's a sense, which very essence of holiness itself, the very concept of holiness, means that which separates and that which divides. Again, now we're talking about, once more, the New Testament believer and his relation to the Old Testament. Again, is there anything in your lifestyle, anything in your wardrobe, anything in your activities which distinctly identify you and set you apart from the rest of culture, the rest of the earth, the rest of the world that we are supposed to be a preservative to and we're supposed to be light to, unto? Again, I pause here. Isn't it interesting? I find it fascinating that the activity of both salt and light occur rather quietly. Not much happening. Do you hear light? Has it been recently that you heard light? Do you hear salt? I mean, other than falling out of the salt shaker and dropping on a countertop of sorts. But the activity to make your, let's see, your Big Mac taste good, you know, or whatever the case is. Do you hear that activity? You know, you put, listen and, oh yeah, that salt's really going after it. But again, we are to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Now, this may break down at some point or another. I think, though, however, think this one through. And I don't know where you are. I tend to be a bit reserved when it comes to marches, when it comes to demonstrations, and in terms of being boisterous and making all kinds of ado about whatever the case may be, even if it is, perhaps, can I say it, even if it is out there relative to the homosexual gender, whatever the case might be. But it seems, again, from principle, both here in the Old Testament and what we found there in Matthew, in his gospel, that we do so perhaps a bit quietly. Now, I know, I'm keenly aware that we as a people, we from our camp have been known as the, let's see, say it again, say it louder. Stilia im Lande. Yeah, well, my German isn't quite that adulterated, so I can't quite do that. Yeah, Stilia im Lande. And I don't know. You know, it may be, and hear me again, it may be that is some of the dilemma that has occurred because we have not, I think there's a difference in perhaps in being the Stilia im Lande and actually being somewhat quiet in our approach in terms of our connection to our neighbor, in terms of our witness. You know, it's not that we say nothing at all. I don't think that's the case either. But I think that we don't become boisterous in terms and obnoxious in terms of our connection, our interaction to those whom we are interested in ministering to and witnessing to. I was going to say and suggest that, again, when we make that connection back there to Matthew and that about the salt of the earth and the light of the world, I am suspicious that the church has not held the standard high enough and not held the bar well enough to have preserved society as it is today in the 21st century. I think we're failing. I think we're failing. And I'd also be so bold as to say, I think BMA may be faltering a bit in terms of what it truly means to understand and to apply holiness. Think that one through. Think that one through. And I would be so candid as to say, even some, what I have observed even here this weekend, in terms of dress. No, seriously, in terms of dress and what it means to falter in understanding holiness and again to be separate. It's easy to sit in there in those sessions and hear that stuff. What does it mean to come out here and put this into practice? Put it into practice. Now, again, in our camp, and I've said this before, that when it comes to some of these issues, you know what? We are more social than organic. More social than organic. Which means that it's easier for us to be social. To connect. Hi, how's your day? In fact, you know, today it's actually raining. That's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that it's raining. Now, let's see, I think, where did we hear? Was it this morning session or somewhere along the weekend, just already this weekend? One of the speakers I think it was in the men's session. Sorry, ladies, it was in the men's session. One of the fellows said something about, when that last amen is said Sunday morning, then what's the subject for discussion? What are we talking about? I suggested already earlier that perhaps we maybe give consideration, again, as was the case for Israel, that because you were delivered out of bondage, that they were given the Sabbath. Now, here's an interesting one, very interesting. And think this one through. I think it might be applicable for us. For, I think the sages and some of the rabbis, now this is somewhat of a rabbi trail perhaps, but the sages and some of the rabbis say that, talking about the Sabbath now, and again, that God, that being one of God's appointed times, not so much that Israel kept the Sabbath, but that the Sabbath kept Israel. Work on that one. What was the Sabbath doing? The Sabbath was weekly reminding them of their deliverance from Egyptian bondage. Perhaps, am I allowed to say it? I see the flap is flopping here, so if I need to make a quick exodus, I can. Perhaps not so much that our ladies are wearing the veiling, not so much that we are keeping that practice, but that practice is keeping us. Think that one through. Again, not so much that we're doing all the ritual and rite that we do, which is what? The ordinances, again, the veiling, baptism, marriage, communion, and also, but that is keeping us. Again, these reminders that God has for us. I think when I left it undone, we were back there dealing with holiness back again in chapter 23 and verse 3, talking about holy convocations. Let's pause and take a look at convocations. What is a convocation? You've been recently attended a convocation? Convocation. Well, I find it interesting that the word that is used there in the Hebrew is, let's see, I'm waiting on a printout. Mo'adim is our mikra. And that word means a rehearsal. So we're talking here about a holy rehearsal. Now, usually, if I share something about this in any given context, we have a couple who is the most recently married among us. And I don't know who that would be here in this context. Well, the context is, I'm going to venture, well, let's see. In fact, actually, some 3 months ago now, we married off our second daughter, and they had a rehearsal. For what reason? Why would you have a wedding rehearsal?
Preparation
for what?
The
for the wedding. God has given us these rehearsals, these appointed times. We're talking about the appointed times, right? The feasts, which are the appointed times, and they're supposed to be holy rehearsals. We go to our holy rehearsal again. Let's see. I think I asked someone to do Leviticus 23:4-5. Anyone? Someone?
These are the feasts of the Lord, even holy convocations that he shall proclaim in their seasons, in the 14th day of the first month, and even in the Lord's Passover.
Okay. What's going on there is that he's talking again about the appointed times, all the feasts of the Lord, and that they are supposed to be proclaimed in their appointed times. Their appointed times. But the Sabbath will sit up there as a model of sorts. As a model of sorts. To all the rest of their appointed times. Of their appointed times. Now, we're back again. Let's see. Let's take it back to, let's see, where should we go? Genesis chapter 2 and verse 3, where he's talking there. And the seventh day he blessed it and sanctified it, because on it he rested from all his work which he had created and made. What does it mean to be separated? And what occurred there? Think this one through. He sanctified, he holied that seventh day. We're talking about the primordial week. We're talking about the weeks of creation. Days of creation, excuse me. Not weeks. Days of creation. He took that seventh day and, can we say, picked it up and set it apart. Distinctly different from all the other days. Becomes that model for all the other, for them, their religious life throughout that year. So again, for you, how is it? To what extent do you find yourself being, again, distinctly separate from that which is the rest of the week? I use a definition, I think, for holiness, and this is it. That which is distinct from the common and the profane. Good understanding of holiness. That which is distinct from the common and the profane. So once more, we ask ourselves, are we living a holy life? Simply answer those questions. How distinct is your media observation, your use of media? How distinct is your entertainment? How distinct is your recreation? How distinct is your dress? How distinct is your lifestyle from that which is common and profane? That's the question. That's the question. I find it interesting as well that, again, this is a rabbi thing. Maybe this is another rabbi trail. But that they would say, the rabbis say that, okay, we have the Sabbath, and then we have the other days of the week. And they would say that the reason we have those 6 days is that the first 3 days of the week, we look over our shoulder at the past Sabbath with fondness. And the next three, we look forward to the next Sabbath with anticipation. With anticipation. But how is it with us? Again, we're talking about the New Testament believer, his connection, relation to the Old Testament. Again, this is one, let's take that and slide it in our catalog. That, again, our anticipation of the appointed time, God's appointed time, that we anticipate that with fondness. Normally, for us, we're sitting in that Sunday morning service, and we're thinking about, whether or not it's going to be raining. And let's see, does that wash off the herbicides from our crops, in whatever case might be? We're thinking about the rain, and, oh, we need to dig that trench tomorrow at the job site, and everything else that we're thinking about. And let's see, our graph, this comes from our choir preparation and all the ups and the downs and the soul and the back and the forth. But that, you know, our life is Monday morning and Wednesday and all the, and that's our weekend. Oh, And then we crash into the weekend, we crash into our Sabbath. Again, the rabbis were saying that, no, ours goes like this. We travel through and we anticipate the activity of a Sabbath coming up. We experience the Sabbath, again, the appointed time, and then we look back with fondness to what had just occurred, and then back up again. Where are we as a people? What's your level of excitement when you think about getting up Sunday morning and assembling again with your fellow believers in whatever congregation you're part of? That excites you at all? Or is it a drag? When we get home after the service, oh, that pastor had a boring sermon this morning. That song leader was terrible. Oh. Where are we? It might be right. All right, I think we're actually close to the last 5 minutes, and I would be ready to pause and allow for some underlining, for some Xing, or from circling. Any feedback? What are you hearing? What do you see? What are you sensing? What's happened in terms of, again, and I understand that there's a myriad of ways that this subject could have been approached relative to the New Testament believer, his connection to the Old Testament, but I think this is at least one. Yes, right there.
I would be interested in thoughts from you on the verses that come right after the salt of the earth, where Jesus talking about the law. Whoever breaks the least of these commandments, teaches man so shall be called least. What is the believer's connection to the Old Covenant in regards to the least of the commandments of the Old Testament?
Right, right. Okay. He's asking about...
That's
yes, I know. Yeah.
That comes right after the salt of the earth.
Right, yeah. Okay, he's back in Matthew, and he's talking there about Jesus right after that text about the salt and the light, and about the person and breaking the law or breaking any part of the law. Okay, here's a quick response to that, and it may work, it may not. And that is, again, once more, I think we're talking about principle. In other words, once more, because as I said at the outset, we can easily become bogged down, I think, in terms of wanting to redirect us back to the law, back to Sabbath observance, and all that comes with it. Incidentally, hang on to that one. Because those who would like to go that route ought to be offering animal sacrifices. And they don't. Many of them don't. Are you with me? Yeah. In other words, if you're going to hang on to the law, if you're going to require the law, then you're going to require all of the law. All of the law. But again, let's go back to the principle that occurs there. And all the principle that we find in the law. What do you want to do? You want to go to the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments? Well, the principle that we find there, I think, is very applicable to the New Testament believer, as I view it, as I see it. You and all. You shall have no other gods before me.
Our speaker before us picked out the abomination passage.
Okay, yeah.
Is that how I can afford it? That's a
principle. Yes. No, No, I think that there are things...
Well, right, next to that, you have words and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Yes, here. Oh, here and then there. Okay, here. Yeah.
Isn't it biblical correct to assume that Jesus taught us very clearly and the apostles that through Jesus, we are perfectly keeping the law?
Yes. Okay.
In other words, the law is being fully satisfied. Every intention, every motive God had in the law is being satisfied through Jesus. So we are perfect to keep the law through Christ.
He came to fulfill the law, not to destroy it. Did he throw it away? He did not throw it away. But he did fulfill it, which means that he lived the law as it was intended to be lived. Yeah. I think it was back there, yeah. Okay, all right, yeah. Okay, here.
Well, on top of that, do you believe that we should emulate the Old Testament Jewish culture?
Jewish culture. I don't think I would be saying that. No. But again, that there are principles that come out of the old Jewish culture. In fact, for example, like I find it personally a very fascinating study to study Jewish wedding ceremonies and how that kind of sort of parallels in type Christ in the church. The betrothal period, that whole kind of thing, the waiting time, the marriage, the marriage feast, and so and again, that fits into the whole study of prophecy in terms of I think you know what Christ is doing. He became our Passover lamb, and then he became our sacrifice. He was our sacrifice, and then once more as that continues on to the time in which he's going to come and dwell. Let's see. We dwell with him. Shall we say it that way? We dwell with him in terms of like the in the end of time. I think it does sort of fit. Anyone else? Yes, right here again.
One question I have for you about our relationship to the Old Testament, and I've used this verse quite a bit in some of my sermons. And I've always wondered if I was maybe on some dangerous territory here, but when I think of God giving the law to Moses, I don't make much of an ontological distinction between God and Jesus at that point.
Okay.
They're one in the same essence there as they're giving the law. So Jesus was the person giving the law to Moses, as good as.
Yeah, okay.
And now he's here talking to his disciples, and he refers to all of that intense revelation back there, and he calls it, it hath been said.
Yeah.
But I say it to you, almost like he's holding himself in distinction to the voice that spoke back then. What do you make of that?
Okay. Let's go to Leviticus 19 and verse 18, where it talks about, let's see, do I need to turn to that? I'm close by. Thou shalt not avenge thyself, nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. What's that mean? And where is it? In John, New Testament talks about, and this is a new commandment that I give to you, that you shall love your neighbor, or something. Yes, yeah. What do you mean a new commandment? We'll find that back there in Leviticus. But as I have loved, and that's the distinction. I think we heard, let's see, once more in the men's session, last speaker talks about what was the reason that Christ came. He came to die, which means, again, we're going to love as he has loved. And that being by laying down our lives for our brothers, for our sisters. The difference. All right. Anyone else yet? I think we're actually, I've got 4:33 here, so I'm ready to break it off formally, unless there are other questions that you would like to pose.
Do you see separation? We talked about separation earlier on. And,
okay.
And the account of Exodus 3 there with Moses and the
Lord.
Yes. Do you see separation being the essence of holiness? As something that we do in preparation for the coming of the presence of the Lord?
Okay.
Or is it the presence of the Lord himself? I mean, the more New Testament believers look on again, his presence is already there.
Right.
So therefore, if I realize that he already is there, then that automatically ought to give direction to my applications there in all kinds of different areas, you know, where I go, what I do, what I look at, what I think about, so is it, I guess I wonder there at the beginning if it was, if you were saying, there's something here that we do these things in order so that God can dwell here, or if it's okay, that the Lord dwells here, and I'm now recognizing that.
Yeah.
Now, because of that, that alters from the inside out.
Right. Yeah.
The way I respond.
I think that's the case. In other words, again, shall we say, in an example of Moses, what did Moses bring to that context? What amount of holiness did Moses bring to that context? What amount of holiness do you bring to the context? I personally bring very little as I read the New Testament. All my righteousness is as filthy rags. Ah, that doesn't help very well. In fact, incidentally, that's a nice, filthy rags, that's a nice part of the package of the study on covenant and covenanting, what that all means in terms of, again, another thing kind of from the Old Testament era, in terms of studying that and understanding that to help us to understand this whole thing about holiness as well. But yeah, again, because the presence of God was there, holiness was present. Incidentally, along that line, it talks about Leviticus, what is it, in chapter, holiness code, where is that? 16? Holocaust is 19. What's an imperative? Any instructors among us here? Talk to me about an imperative. What is an imperative?
Commandment.
Commandment. What kind of a commandment? Say it again?
Absolute.
In other words, something you must do. It's interesting. Be ye holy, for I am holy. Or what is it? Holiness. Kodesh, not Kodesh. Which means exist holy because I exist holy. And that is in the imperative in the Hebrew. So again, God is present there. But because God is present there and or as a result of God being present there, hey, you live holy. And that sobers me personally. Because I recognize that I still have a little bit of unrighteousness in me for some reason. I think perhaps because I was born in the state of Michigan. Maybe that's a start. That's a start. Hey, you guys from Ohio, be quiet now. All right. Okay, hey, thanks for your attention. I think formally we bring this to a close. I would be happy to entertain any questions or further that you have about things I need to underscore and circle and cross out. And, all right. Other than that, God bless you. The rest of the weekend.